Providence, presenting Mark Wolf and Another American, Asking and Telling, an exploration of the U.S. military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, today through February 10th, and the NPR online shop featuring a variety of NPR-related merchandise, including Lost and Found Sound on CD or cassette on the web at npr.org.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. How many presidents does it take to fix the Argentine economy? In the last 2 weeks, it's five and counting. President Eduardo Duhalde, the newest politician appointed to lead Argentina, is expected to announce a currency devaluation plan that will likely devastate the country's middle class, bankrupt many small businesses, spark more riots, and maybe, well, just maybe, revolution. Before the holidays, the country's economic crisis appeared to be just a blip on the global macroeconomic screen, a self-contained currency crisis that would soon right itself. But since then, mass looting and riots have plunged this once prosperous country further into political chaos and economic anarchy. While most Argentines place the blame for the crisis squarely with their leaders, some outside observers blame the International Monetary Fund and reckless Wall Street investors for pouring wads of money into Argentina without regard for long-term planning. While this finger-pointing continues, there are reports today that Argentine negotiators are on their way to Washington to beg for a bailout. Connection listeners, just how far should the international financial community go to help stave off political collapse in Argentina? In a global financial world, is there a shared responsibility for democracy? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can, of course, join us online at theconnection.org. I'm joined in the studio by Stephen Levitsky. He's the assistant professor of government at Harvard University. And from Washington, D.C., by Ian Vasquez. He's director of the Cato Institute's Project for Global Economic Liberty. And joining us by phone from Buenos Aires is Thomas Catan, a correspondent with the Financial Times. And Thomas, I'll begin with you if I can. I want to know how we're seeing evidence of this economic chaos unfolding on the streets.
Well, this has been building over the last 3.5 years that Argentina has been in recession. Over the last few months, you've started to get some very bizarre effects as the government tried to hold together the one-to-one peg with the dollar and essentially stop the money from flowing out the country. So they put in place a series of banking controls. Argentines can only take $1,000 a month out of their bank account. There's capital controls. You can't send money out of the country. And all of that has resulted in a very strange series of phenomena on the ground. Obviously, most Argentines work in the informal sector, and they've been heavily hit by the lack of cash. And overnight, people have had to go and open bank accounts, even though they're frozen, just to get very basic everyday transactions done.
Are people using pesos? Are they using dollars? Are they using any other kind of currency?
Well, they're using all sorts of currencies. The provincial governments, because of the shortage of cash, the provincial governments have been printing up bonds and using them as cash. It's as if there was a shortage of cash nationally, so New York State decides to use its power to print bonds instead of currency. And, they look like dollar bills and they feel like dollar bills, and people use them interchangeably with dollar bills. So depending on what you want to define as a currency today, there's anything between 10, 15, 20 different types of money circulating in Argentina.
You mean I might actually buy vegetables with a provincial bond in Argentina today?
Oh, that's right. I have a five Patacon note in my wallet that I was given yesterday by a taxi driver. I wasn't too happy about it, but I'm happy to pin it up on my wall as part of Argentina's long and varied monetary history. That joins my $1 million peso note from about 15 years ago. So Argentina has long had a history of monetary instability. It tamed that for about 10 years by pegging the peso to the dollar under a currency board. And today that looks likely to be coming to an end.
Thomas, stay with us if you can. I want to bring Stephen Levitsky into the conversation and even Ian Vasquez as well. Stephen, you're listening to this description, and Connection listeners may remember that you were with us on this program, just less than 3 weeks ago. We were talking about how so much of this appeared to be something that could be contained. What changed in that time?
When we talked about it being contained, we talked about it being contained financially and with respect to international finance. We didn't talk much about whether it would be contained politically and how Argentines would react to either the reforms or the lack of reforms in the case of the De La Rúa government. And I don't think anybody would have predicted that things would have fallen politically this low, that you'd have five presidents in 12 days. I mean, Argentina has a long history of political instability, but Argentine commentators are saying this is the worst ever.
So when we talk about outside involvement, does the political chaos then require a more closer attention or perhaps more involvement from the rest of the world than we were discussing before?
It does if you or the U.S., in terms of foreign policy, is interested in a democratic future in Latin America, if it's interested in promoting and or protecting democracy.
Ian Vasquez, tell me what you're thinking about that.
Well, I think we certainly have to be concerned about the state of Argentina's democracy and about social unrest there, and also about its effect on the rest of Latin America. There are other countries like Venezuela that are going in the opposite direction, in the direction of populism, and it looks like the new president today may be heading in that direction. So I think that certainly the United States should be concerned about that, but it also has to be realistic as to just how much control it has over events in Buenos Aires and how much responsibility Buenos Aires has for creating the situation there.
Thomas Catan, are people in Argentina expecting that there'll be some kind of bailout similar to the money that was gathered together for Mexico back in the mid-90s?
No, they're certainly not holding their breath. Argentina has received two international rescue packages in just over a year. The IMF organized helped put together a $40 billion package in December 2000. That didn't work. Argentina went back to the IMF in August 2001 and got another $8 billion to stop a bank run. Again, that failed. And Ann Kruger, the IMF number two, said recently that they lent that money really knowing that it had almost no chance of succeeding. So clearly all of this raises a lot of questions for the IMF in how it thinks about how to deal with these kinds of crises in the future, for the U.S. Treasury, which has also been trying to define a position on these kind of things, and also for Argentina. Now, locally in Argentina, I have to say that this is seen as the fault of the politicians. If you speak to the man in the street, essentially they're furious at politicians. They feel that that they've turned what was 100 years ago one of the wealthiest countries in the world, the seventh, depending on which figures you use, to a sort of global economic basket case. You know, the politicians have some blame in all of this, there's no doubt. There's also wider structural and global issues that are at work here that I think can't be ignored. Nevertheless, people are clearly looking for some sort of blame game at this stage and trying to explain just how this happened.
So, Stephen Levitsky, is this the time to just watch and see what could be done, or do you think that there are measures that could be taken at this point?
The devaluation is going to be incredibly costly if they go ahead with it, which I expect they will. A 30-40% devaluation, which is what is being talked about, is going to create a lot of losers. It's unclear how those losers are going to be distributed. There's talk of a pesificación, which is turning all debts of $100,000 and less from dollars into pesos so that those debt holders don't lose value of their currency. But somebody's going to lose. And
Let me just understand this. It gets a little bit complicated because people would be paid in pesos, but the peso would be pegged to the dollar. So if the peso is devalued, what happens both to the people, you know, like you and me, who have a bank account and the businesses?
Well, the bank accounts lose value. The concern is that a very, very large number of middle-class Argentines and small businesses have large debts in dollars, and their debts will increase in value if they're not transferred from dollars to pesos. But somebody's got to lose. So if the people who hold debt get compensated, then it's the banks and people who have accounts that are going to lose, and that could mean the banks go under. So,
yeah.
if somebody's going to lose big, there's a chance of major either political unrest. If middle and lower class people lose big, if banks lose big and they go under, you have a mess on that side. That's where a bailout can potentially help.
Thomas, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it might be useful for people to get some idea of just how dollarized the Argentine economy is. And has been for a very long time. In the late 1980s, Argentina's inflation ran out of control. There was inflation rates of up to 5,000% a year. People would run from get their paycheck and run down to the supermarket to try and buy non-perishable goods, you know, kilos of sugar before their money would become worthless. They'd run around from one money changer in the street to another. The whole of Buenos Aires, large avenues in Buenos Aires, were described at the time as looking something like a trading floor, as ordinary housewives and taxi drivers would try and preserve some of the value of their money. Now, the way in which they do that, obviously, would be to try and buy the only currency they believed in, which was dollars. And Argentina has imported vast amounts of physical dollar bills, that which people stuff under their mattresses because they don't believe in the banks, quite rightly, because now their deposits are frozen. So when Domingo Cavallo in 1991 pegged the peso to the U.S. dollar, in many respects, he was only formalizing something that happened already, which was that people didn't believe in the local currency or currencies, because there were several in several years, that depreciated out of existence. So they essentially used dollars and start doing transactions in dollars. The one-to-one peg essentially just formalized that. But even today, all of my, for example, my phone bill is in dollars, my electricity bill is in dollars, and it's indexed to U.S. inflation.
And these are foreign-owned phone companies and utilities companies, right?
Well, that's right. Now, what the government has to do to devalue, I mean, it's not just reset the value of the peso. The problem is that Argentines think and breathe and dream in greenbacks. And if you just devalue, the fear is that everyone will just adjust prices and still think in dollars. That'll clearly create inflation and defeat the whole purpose of a devaluation. So what they're trying to do is essentially force everyone into using the peso, a peso that will now be devaluing. They will force the foreign-owned utility companies to use to charge in pesos, which is something they won't be happy about. And they'll try and compensate people for getting less, a real decline in their wages.
Thomas,
highs in the 30s, Sunday partly sunny in the day, highs in the 30s and Sunday night, a storm moves in, snow or rain likely, lows in the 30s, Monday snow likely during the day, then partly cloudy, breezy, highs in the 30s. This is WBUR, Boston, Cape Cod, and the islands.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. We're talking about what's happening in Argentina these days. There was to have been a currency devaluation announced today. That's been delayed, perhaps a day. Things are pretty messy down there. Our telephone number is pretty clear. It's 1-800-423-8255. If you've some thoughts on the subject, we'd love to have you in. My guests are Stephen Levitsky. He's an assistant professor of government at Harvard University. Joining us from Washington, D.C., Ian Vasquez, who's director of the Cato Institute's Project for Global Economic Liberty. And Ian, I wanted to bring you in on this issue of the sort of political unrest that Stephen was describing, which could come from the devaluation, and whether or not at some point along there the rest of the world has to say, we can't allow this to happen because of what it will mean for the rest of Latin America.
Well, I think that the coming devaluation will be disastrous. It will probably lead to more than a 30 or 40% fall in the currency. The government has been talking about trying to control that depreciation, letting it depreciate maybe 30% and fixing that peg. It will fail at that, as we have seen so many other countries try to do that in times of crisis. It should not even try to. It will waste a lot of reserves and make certain individuals wealthy.
What are you saying, that it just has to float?
If it devalues, then it should let the currency float. Unfortunately, I think that a devaluation will mean a financial crisis, because it will create widespread bankruptcies, especially because so many people in Argentina are indebted in dollars and they will not be able to pay back their debts, and that will spill over into the financial system, which will be bankrupt. That means that the Argentinian government will somehow have to come up with a rescue plan or a reorganization of the banking system. And probably, given the political situation in Argentina, it will try to bail out banks that are bankrupt and increase its debt further.
The type of financial crisis that you're describing would automatically lead to a political crisis, even worse than a one where we've seen five presidents in the last month.
It may very well. Unfortunately, I think that this government has misdiagnosed Argentina's problems as one of too much in the way of market policies, when in fact, over the past several years, the problem really has been uncontrolled government spending. Spending has skyrocketed, and the economy has not kept up. Taxes have increased. They've done pretty much everything to kill the economy and create uncertainty about the pegged exchange rate system. That has led to panic in the banking system and to the unfolding of the political crisis today. It would be, in my opinion, far better for the Argentinians to dollarize their economy at once and in one move, and that currency risk, which is creating all these other problems. That wouldn't solve every problem in the economy. They would still have to introduce many other reforms. But it would at least help to restore some confidence in the banking system, and they could move on from there.
But are you saying that until that happens, or even while Argentina goes through the sort of pain, that the financial and political pain, that the United States, the rest of the world, the IMF should stand back, wait for the chaos to end before coming in again?
I think that especially with the current government, which has not only been reluctant to introduce market reforms but has been explicitly hostile to them, a bailout of Argentina under the current conditions would be like so many other bailouts in the IMF over the past several years that have been intended to prevent the currency collapse and save banking systems, but have failed to do so. The best examples are Indonesia and Russia, where the IMF has poured tens of billions of dollars there with virtually nothing in return in terms of reforms.
We've got Paul Bluestein on the line with us. He's a reporter with the Washington Post, and he's also written a book. It's called The Chastening, Inside the Crisis That Rocked the Global Financial System and Humbled the IMF. Paul, I'm interested to bring you in now on this question of bailouts. Ian saying they don't work. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I think a bailout would have a different purpose than some of the bailouts we've seen in the past. I mean, very important distinction to make in Argentina's case is the government is in default. I mean, a lot of the IMF bailouts that we've seen in the past several years, particularly the Mexican case, the Russian case, and so forth, were aimed at trying to stave off a default. And Argentina has now announced that it is suspending payment on its foreign debt. They simply can't afford to pay it, and they've been, I think economists around the world would generally agree that that's a you know, unfortunate but appropriate step to take in this case. When you just can't afford to pay your debts, you just got to figure out some way of restructuring them. So
is there a way in for the IMF, for the rest of the world, or is it an appropriate time to stand back?
Well, I think to come back to what Ian was talking about in terms of that sort of series of processes that Argentina has to go through to get itself back on its feet, there is an appropriate role for the IMF. They're certainly, I can tell you, they're thinking along these lines. It really does depend on what sort of policies the Argentine government decides to adopt. If they go kind of in a crazy, unorthodox direction, then I think the IMF will kind of stand back and let the country go for a while in the hope that it'll come to its senses. On the other hand, this devaluation, as Ian says, is going to mean that, you know, debtors, people who owe dollars, are now going to be, in a sense, bankrupt. So you have to change those debts to pesos. And that means that the people who hold the debts are bankrupt. So you have to do something about the banking system to prop up the banking system. You have to pump money into the banking system so that you can have a functioning banking system again, and that's going to cost a lot of money. And that's where the IMF and other international lenders can come in and say, look, if the country's going to adopt a sensible set of economic policies, you know, this is a set of processes that the country needs to go through to get itself back on its feet. We're willing to give them a loan to tide them over. It's at least I think Ian's quite right to be skeptical and to say that these things have failed in the past, and that unless the Argentines take a whole raft of measures that are necessary, that it will fail. But walking away from a country that is at least taking a lot of very painful steps toward getting itself on its feet is rather, I think for a lot of people, that's a very difficult thing to contemplate doing. And it really will, you know, the devil will be in the details. We have to see what policies the government's going to adopt. It doesn't surprise me at all to hear that they're delaying for a day or two announcing their policies. They've got a lot of very difficult, complicated decisions to make. So we have to see which directions they go. And if they do go in a direction that's very hostile to markets, and going back to the sort of, you know, glory days of Peronism, and I use the term glory days with a tinge of sarcasm, then I do think that, you know, there's no question the IMF and the rest of the international financial institutions will stand back and say, well, you know, we just don't think that's going to work, so we're not going to support it.
Connection listeners, what do you think? What's the sensible economic policy under the circumstances? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. John's on the line from Medford. Medford. Hi, John.
Hello. I was just wondering, it seems that in roughly the last decade, a lot of private debt owed by corporations and a few wealthy individuals was made public. If I understand that correctly, and suddenly the public, the whole public that we're not now talking about facing a lot of suffering in the Argentine middle classes, became responsible for that debt. Now, this was years ago, but it was over $100 billion, if I remember right. We were talking about $40 and $8 billion the IMF loaned last December and then more recently last August. And I wonder what is the IMF global policy and how open to discussion is the idea of requiring Argentines who have those hundreds of billions of dollars to really put them to use, because we're already considering that moral question of having a lot of Argentine middle-class people suffer tremendously. And just to take a look at this, keep our minds open to the idea of having the very few wealthy individuals and corporations in the billions of dollars of wealth suffer maybe a little bit more. Just to reduce their standard of living from an extreme position of wealth, maybe to a typical middle-class standard, something like that.
Well, it is a different situation because of the size of the middle class in Argentina. Paul, what about this, the transfer of debt that John's talking about?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure what he means when he says that corporate debts were socialized. I mean, the debt that Argentina has is sovereign debt. It's the debt of the government that is of principal concern, and that's the debt that the government the country can't afford to pay. But to come back to my point I was making earlier about the fact that the government has defaulted, I mean the foreign bondholders, the mutual funds, the hedge funds, the banks, big fat cat institutions that lent money to Argentina at rather high interest rates over the past few years are now going to take a hit. The country has announced, we just can't afford to service this debt, and so I think that looking back on this, this will have a number of good effects in the long run. It'll tell people like that, those fat cats, that they can't expect to be bailed out in every case. That hopefully will make them a lot more cautious about throwing money into these countries in the future.
Well, I believe it was the economic minister Cavallo, if I remember correctly, who was actually the only member of the government to stay in power back in 93, if I remember it right, when there was a transition of government, because he figured out a way to make this private debt owed by private corporations and individuals suddenly something that the public had to bear, the government had to bear.
Well, you're at a I was in Tokyo for 5 years in the early 90s, and I'm afraid I wasn't paying that close attention to what happened to the debt. You could be right, and if so, in the process that the country's going through now, that some steps could be taken to address that point. I'm not sure that it's critical for a critical point now is to get the country back on its feet, and there's often a trade-off in these cases between getting a country back on its feet, sort of jump-starting the engine and dispensing justice. I mean, sometimes scoundrels get off easily in these processes because there's just no other way of getting of giving the country hope and getting them moving toward a prosperous future.
Okay, go ahead, Stephen.
The problem is, from the Argentine man in the streets' point of view, is that the scoundrels have gotten off quite a few times in the last couple of decades.
Politicians, business people.
Sure.
Yeah, all right.
But can I make one correction? I don't think it's fair to characterize Duhalde as someone who's crazy, unorthodox, and likely to bring the government in the direction of the glory days of Peronism. This guy is, and has always been, from the center of the party. He's pretty much a centrist. He characterizes himself as center-left, but then so do the presidents of Chile and Brazil today. He is quite very much from the mainstream of political and economic thought.
He carries a lot of high-spending baggage with him from his earlier days, doesn't
he? Not particularly.
He
was a governor of Buenos Aires for two terms and is widely considered to have been fairly successful compared to his predecessors as governor of Buenos Aires and compared to his other contemporaries, other governors of Buenos Aires. He did a fairly good job. The budgets got out of control the last couple of years of his governorship.
Ian Vasquez.
But he is viewed by most Argentinians as very much a part of the political class that has created the current conditions. And I think it may be politically problematic for him to be president of a country that has not elected him, but that the people in Congress, the rest of the political class, have put in place. And so that, I think, further may discredit him in the eyes of many Argentinians who really are expecting something more
He's very much from the Argentine political class. It's very true that Argentines view him that way. But it's politically problematic for anybody to be president of Argentina today. It's not clear who the alternative to Duhalde would be. Somebody's got to get Argentina through the next couple of years. It's not clear that Duhalde is the best guy for the job. It's also not clear he's the worst. And the question you have to ask when you reject the political elite, when you reject the party politicians, traditional politicians, is what comes after. And if you look at Latin American history, what it suggests is it's often much worse. It's the military or it's somebody like Hugo Chavez. And I would prefer somebody from the political elite, somebody like Duvalde, to those options.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. John, thanks for your call to Medway. Now Stefan's on the line. Hi, Stefan.
Hi. I just wanted to... I just recently returned from Argentina, having been down there for 6 months, and was returned right before Christmas after the resignation of De La Rúa. And I just wanted to talk about the FMI role, the IMF,
yeah,
in the rebuilding of Argentina, because I do believe they're going to have some kind of role, and that they need to be careful about looking at their past involvement and how that affected. I really think that their obsession really with deficit zero is one of the things that helped to push Argentina towards this crisis. They
kept giving them money, Stefan. That was part of the problem, that the Argentine politicians said, no, we need another tranche, we need another tranche, and the IMF gave them money at a time when it seems like people on all different parts of the spectrum say, you should have cut them off a long time ago.
Well, they gave them money to prop up a system that wasn't really working. Argentina really has not invested in anything in terms of real economic growth. They've been playing a monetary game that has gotten them basically nowhere. And I really think that if the IMF is to invest in Argentina in the future, it needs to be to increase, for instance, tax revenue, so they can have a solvent government, because, you know, the government has a role in investing in the economy and helping it to grow, and a total austerity policy only helps to slow the economy even more, which is what is causing this crisis.
Can I jump in here?
Go ahead, Paul.
And address this issue of the IMF sort of imposing austerity on Argentina, because I think there's an important point that you have to understand for the background of that. The Argentines, I think, in this case, there are a lot of IMF bailouts and rescues where the IMF really does impose policies on a country. I mean, they basically say, you know, if you want to be able to import goods, if you want dollars that you need to import medicine, in effect. I mean, they don't put it this way, but they, in effect, they hold the country up and they say, you got to do the following things. In this case, Argentina decided in 91 that it was going to have this dollar peg, and it was, you know, very understandable. They had these decades of hyperinflation, and they just were dying for monetary stability. So they pegged the peso to the dollar, and you know, it worked wonders for some years and restored monetary stability to the country, got rid of inflation. But as time wore on, the peso became overvalued, exports became uncompetitive, and it got us to the point where we are now. And
Paul, I want you to pick up that thought on the IMF when we come back after our...
...using their cameras on war-torn Afghanistan. Their film, Jung in the Land of the Mujahideen, is an unflinching look at the brutal reality of life and death in Afghanistan. And we take a trip to the studios of Radio Havana, Cuba. That's Here and Now, today at noon on 90.9 WBUR. Boston's NPR news station.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name is Dick Gordon. We're talking about Argentina, the political troubles, the economic chaos that has that country in such a grip right now. My guests, Stephen Levitsky, Assistant Professor of Government at Harvard, Ian Vasquez, Director of the Cato Institute's Project for Global Economic Liberty. And we had a call from Stefan in Medway about whether or not the IMF needs to become more directly involved in helping Argentina right now. Paul Bluestein, reporter with The Washington Post and author of a book on the IMF, was speaking to that when we went away for our break. Paul, do you want to pick that up?
Well, yeah. The point I was going to make is that it was really an Argentine choice to go with this type of system of pegging the peso very rigidly to the dollar on a one-to-one basis. I mean, it was so rigid that the central bank was legally bound. If you came to them with a peso, they were legally bound to give you a dollar for it. And, you know, the IMF was skeptical of whether this would work in the long run, but they said, look, if this is the Argentine choice, then fine, we're willing to support it with loans. But in order to maintain that system, it does require a tremendous amount of fiscal discipline. You can't run big deficits if you're going to have that type of of incredibly disciplined monetary system, you can't have the rest of the economy be undisciplined. I mean, to put it in shorthand. So I don't think it's really fair to beat up on the IMF for imposing austerity in Argentina. Argentina made a choice. As I say, it in many ways was a sensible choice, but they stuck with it, I think, very clearly. We know, we can see now in hindsight, just too long. And the question is, how can the IMF support the country in a reasonable way, getting back on its feet? And that comes back to the point we were talking about before, where really what's going to have to happen is this currency system is going to have to be demolished and a new system erected to take its place, and the country is very likely to need financial support to tide it over. That's where the IMF can come in. The big question is how sensible the policies are that the new government's going to take, and that really, I think, is a huge question mark.
Okay.
May I say, make a quick comment? I don't think that the IMF has been very successful at imposing conditions on Argentina. Argentina has not met the conditions of the IMF, so it's not accurate to say that. On the other hand, I do think that its involvement has created sort of a perversion in the flow of capital there. It has been, up until now, with this Argentine crisis, basically the policy of the IMF to do almost anything to avoid a country going into default at any cost, which means that the IMF has, for many years now, been prepared to pour money into countries precisely to avoid a default situation. This is known by investors, both in Argentina and outside of Argentina, and helps explain in large part why the government of Argentina over the past several years, even though it was following policies that were not pro-growth policies, was able to borrow and keep borrowing and keep borrowing. Investors that were lending money to Argentina knew fully that the IMF would come to the rescue, and indeed they have put together more than $40 billion in bailout packages just in the past year or so. Now, finally, the situation has changed precisely because the IMF has been pouring money into a country that has not reformed itself, and it cannot continue doing this in a country whose principal problem, unlike the situation in Mexico and the other crisis countries in the past, is high debt. It simply cannot continue to pile more debt on top of more debt in that country. This has forced not only reforms to be thought about in Argentina, but also reforms at the IMF itself.
Let's go back to our telephone lines, 1-800-423-8255. Stefan, thanks for your call to Lee, calling in from New Hampshire. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Go ahead, Lee.
I'm Lee Wotherspoon, live in Newton, New Hampshire, but I lived for years in Argentina in the 70s when I was a director for Gillette Company. And I've seen a society, in this case in Buenos Aires, collapse in just 6 months' time when things got too far out of whack. I'm also a counselor in psychology, and I see a parallel to when a person has very wealthy parents who continually rescue them from having to deal with the consequences of bad choices again and again. They become spoiled in both senses of the word, both self-indulgent and weak inside. And in fact, there's a Spanish word, chiquilina, which means childlike. And I found the porteños, the people in Buenos Aires, really very charming and attractive people, but not very strong in the face of handling adversity. And that's natural because you come to expect someone else to rescue you, and you don't think of what the consequences are, because there will always be somebody to remove those consequences from you, and so you go on, in this case, living beyond your means.
You're saying it's time for some tough economic love in Argentina, then?
Yes, but I'd go beyond that the longer this goes, the higher you fly and the farther there is to fall, and I really agree with your guess that the coming devaluation will in all likelihood be quite disastrous, and I believe there's a lesson for the U.S. in that. That just as Argentina was rescued for the last 40 or more years from Perón in the 50s to the U.S. and the IMF in the 90s, and they lived beyond their ability to earn and beyond their means for longer and longer periods of time, that the same thing has happened to the U.S. by the extensions of debt and the lowering to to unnatural interest rates and the advent of charge cards and the fiscal manipulation, that I'm fearful that our country may, in fact, not be learning the lesson that Argentina is showing us. And I've seen when that happens, how a society can truly be brought to its knees really overnight. When I was in Argentina as a director, as I say, for Gillette, I had to live with armed bodyguards 24 hours a day, and people tried to kidnap me and shot and killed one of my bodyguards while I was there. And when I went there, not 8 or 10 months before that, it was a peaceful, halcyon, lovely place to be because the people were so sweet and childlike.
Let's just bring it up to the present, though. Stephen, I want to hear from you on this.
I just wanted to point out that Argentina's bottomed out both economically and politically 3 times since the mid-1970s, so I'm not sure that a characterization of Argentines, particularly their psychology, based on the mid-70s is particularly accurate today.
I think the question is, why does it keep happening?
Got an answer for that, Ian?
Well, the political system changed dramatically in Argentina, as somebody summed up earlier in the show, in this century with Perón in the 1940s. And this has led to a lot of the types of government interventions and programs, arbitrary rule, the absence of the rule of law, which has basically eliminated the institutions of a free society. Argentina is probably the only country in history that is an example of a first world country falling into the third world in such a short period of time. 100 years ago, it was one of the richest countries in the world. It is much, much more difficult to get back to the first world after you have gotten to the third world.
I don't think it's particularly fair to lay the blame for things today on the Peronist government of the 40s. Argentina changed its political system at least 5 times since then, and since 1983 has had one of Latin America's most successful democracies. For the first time ever, it changed government from party to party 2 times. Civil and political liberties are broadly protected over the last 20 years. Civilian control of the military fully established for the first time since 1930. These are major political gains. These are important political gains.
Those are dramatic and positive changes, and Argentina could also be characterized in the past 10 years as one of the countries that have done the most to move in the direction of markets. My point here is that the legacy of the past is still very heavy in Argentina, and that is one of the reasons why it keeps falling into these traps.
Okay, Lee, thanks a lot for your call. To Viviana, calling in from Davenport, Iowa. Hi, Viviana.
Hi. I'm Viviana. I grew up in Argentina. I'm 38 years old. I came to live in the United States 10 years ago, and I'm a physician here. I think it is very easy to look at it from the outside and say, oh, Argentinians don't know how to suffer, like I think it was Lee that was saying.
Yeah.
When at this point, people have, in many provinces, have not received a paycheck for 6 months. You have teachers who have not been paid. You have the middle classes. There is a revolution because people are just not being able to feed their children. I talked to my brother. He's a surgeon. 80% of his patients are insured through government insurance, through government health plans. So therefore, all of his work since July, 80% of his work since July has not been paid for. So I think it's very harsh for that person to say they're childlike and they cannot maintain this. In the other comment I had to say was that in the last 10 years, you know, I left Argentina because I wanted to train in family medicine in the United States, and this is what I am right now. But when I left in 1990, you would see a country that had a lot of pride. It was starting to build up again. And as globalization took place, every year or two when I visit, I would see more of American things there. When Walmart came to my hometown, they built a mega Walmart in my hometown, which is a city of 200,000 people. most of the supermarkets that were owned by people in the town couldn't compete with Walmart prices, and they went under. And so those are the people who now own debts because they were never able to survive the presence of American companies there.
Vivian, I want to interrupt you if I can, because I'm interested in what your brother's telling you now about the circumstances in Argentina, whether or not he's saying all the people who are broke, all the people who are finding their pride under attack, are they saying that no politician in Argentina can fix this? Is there a risk of going back to some kind of military rule there?
I think, I don't know if there is a risk of some kind of military rule, because I think the last 10 years the government has taken enough money away from the military and enough support that I don't think they have any power at this point.
Are they looking to for an answer?
I don't believe the middle class in Argentina believes in politicians anymore. That was one of the big reasons I said. My father was a son of Spanish immigrants, and he was very nationalistic, and he was very upset that I was going to believe in Argentina because I just couldn't feel I could trust the country anymore. And I think in the last 10 years, people have more and more realized that we cannot trust our politicians. I think there's too much corruption. But I just don't know how you can fix this. The government of Entre Ríos, the province I'm from, the governor, who people had liked, suddenly became somebody who was very despotic, and he just said nobody's getting a paycheck, and since July, except for I think one paycheck in September, nobody has gotten anything. And so what people see happening is that there is an increase in petty crime, there is an increase in big crime. You get in a taxi and you're not safe anymore. I mean, this was a very safe, wonderful country to visit, and it has.
Viviana, thanks very much for your call. It's nice to have your perspective. I'm interested, Stephen. Just we began by talking about what are the risks. Now we're talking about political chaos. You heard what Viviana's saying. What are your thoughts?
I think what Viviana is saying reflects the views of an awful lot of Argentines, and that's the great danger. Argentines, or a large number of Argentines, have ceased to believe that their elected officials, that their elected governments can or want to serve their interests in even a minimal way. And when you reach that point, there is a tremendous danger of democratic breakdown. There's a danger of it, and I agree with Viviana that it's unlikely to be a military rule like we saw in the past, but a Fujimori or Chavez-like scenario becomes increasingly likely, and that's the great danger.
Equally dangerous, if I might add, is the concept that globalization is responsible for the ills of Argentina right now, when in fact many of the problems that are seen in Argentina, especially in the provinces and elsewhere, are due exactly to a lack of reform. You have bureaucracies that are gigantic in most of the provinces in Argentina, where public spending equals 70% to 80% of those regional economies, where it takes 12 bureaucratic procedures, 77 business days, and more than $2,000 in fees just to open a business, compared to 2 days and two procedures and $280 in a country like Canada. So there are tremendous burdens on ordinary Argentinians that have led to this massive participation in the informal economy.
The interesting thing,
in Argentina,
though, is how people perceive that, because already
right.
There are politicians in Brazil who are saying, vote for me, I'm from the left. The IMF has looted Argentina. I won't let it happen here. But that may be the subject for another hour on The Connection. I want to thank my guests for being with me. Ian Vasquez is director of a project on global economic liberty at the Cato Institute. Stephen Levitsky, assistant professor of government and political science at Harvard University.
Thank you.
Earlier we talked with Thomas.